one more for.
Okay.
I like those.
We're gonna, we need one more, right?
Yes.
Okay, so why don't we start, we're gonna pass over the agenda and the minutes and go to comments from the chair. What?
Roll call.
Roll call.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Terry Brown is excused. Mark Brunner?
Here.
Jim Carroll?
Here.
Michelle Altamont?
Here.
Judy Diversa is excused. Greg Fagan is excused. Michael Fitzpatrick?
Here.
Don Bornagia? Glenn Harvey?
Here.
Bill Klein?
Here.
Jason Mankoff?
Here.
Tina Pena? Albert Richwagon is excused, and Chelsea Reed is excused. We do not have more, Mr. Chair.
There are no comments from the chair.
May I ask one quick question?
Sure.
Does it typically need one more for form?
We need one more for form.
Okay. CAC liaison.
This is just the screen, yes.
Yep. Okay, for the liaison report, first thing, the rest of the nation's catching up with us with Bicycle Month. It's National Bicycle Month. We had ours a few months ago. This one is in the winter.
Yes.
And everybody else is winter. Next, this month we'll be meeting, the EPA governing board will be meeting in Belglades. So we'll be out furthest west as we go. Meeting out there, and that will occur on June 20th at 9 a.m. Next, the July meetings, they will be a week past what their normally scheduled time is. And lastly, we're still looking for a disabled community representative to be on the BT PAC. If anyone knows of anyone who might be able to fill that position and a role, be sent them our way. And lastly, we always have upcoming conferences listed on our website. If anyone is interested, they can go to the website and look at what kind of conferences are up and coming and stay informed and know what's out there. And that's it for the
liaison. We have another member who just joined us, so we have a quorum now.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Adopt the minutes of May 1st.
I'll motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. We're now at general public comments and public comments on the agenda items. Any members of the public wish to speak? Nope. Okay. First item is a motion to recommend adoption of the 2024 TIP.
Afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Jason. I'm the TIP coordinator for the TPA. I'm going to go over the final draft TIP document this afternoon. So we saw this last month. That was the draft form. This is the final draft. I've fine-tuned it a bit more. It's up on our website, and I've provided a few more informational items as part of this final draft. So, and at the end of the presentation, I'll ask for a motion to advance, move this to the board for approval. So, how we got here today, first thing was last year in March in 2018, we have the local initiatives and the transportation alternative grants that were due, and those get ranked and selected, and then they get sent, put in a TPA priority list, and that priority list is then sent to FDOT for them to consider for funding and then build those projects into their work program. Then they release a draft work program and then a final work program. We use their draft and their final work program to build our draft TIP document and then our final TIP document, which is here, which is what I'm bringing to you today. So when this goes to the board for final approval and adoption on the 20th for the with the TPA board, we'll begin to operate under this new TIP document in July once it's approved. So, just as a snapshot, as an overall summary, it's about 457 projects totaling $277 billion over a course of 5 years. So in this next 5 years, that's how much is programmed for projects in Palm Beach County. It's broken down into 300 FDOT projects, and then there's about 157 local projects that are built from Palm Beach County projects or any local projects that I get from local municipalities. I send a request out to them when they provide me information about those projects. We incorporate it into the TIP document just to create a more complete picture of all of the construction and all the projects that are happening in our county, be it local or from the DOT. Next, this is the total funding by project section, and I've broken it down also by funding source. So you can see the TIP is broken down by several different sections, and this kind of spreads them out to show you, you know, what's the funds within each of these sections. And the largest section is the assist capacity projects. There are several projects in there, including Beeline Highway there. That's a pretty large project, and there's some turnpike projects as well that make up a considerable amount of the assist capacity projects. And then from there, there's the next largest category is maintenance. And we have several categories that make up maintenance. That's the operation and maintenance of transit, of roadways, and major maintenance. So those three components together kind of build a good portion of the TIP document of just maintaining the system that we have. And then the largest portion, the assist capacity, is just building, expanding or building the system on the strategic intermodal system. And then the third piece, just to call your attention to, is the major TPA projects. That should be about $200 million. It is underperforming. We don't have a lot of major projects that are in the TIP, but in future years, as they become funded, that'll start to adjust, and you'll see more funding in major TPA projects that we bring forward as a TPA.
Can I ask a question about that last slide?
Yes.
Transportation alternative program, is that mostly bike lanes?
It's all the transportation alternative grants to date, or not to date, but the ones that are currently.
Include buses?
I don't manage that program, but I think you could do...
It's mostly non-motorized, so it is a smaller portion of funds. It's bike lanes and sidewalks. It's the majority of those. And there's some safety improvements, like a pedestrian crosswalks.
So what it's saying there, what I'm reading, is that state has no interest in those kind of programs.
That one, the Transitional Alternatives Program, is actually funded through a federal grant, so that's why you want to see a lot of state funding put towards that. It's a smaller part of a pot of money in general. We only get to our area to spend every year $3.1 million. Oh. So over the 5 years, you're only looking at, what's that, 15 million?
So EA is 3 million.
I understand, but what I'm saying is not an FDOT radar at all, alternatives to cars.
Yeah, they're mostly interested in the system that they maintain and are responsible for, where the transit and the transit network just kind of sits on top of the roadway network, to where HomTran and the local agencies will pursue funding for buses and stuff. And yeah, they, since the DOT, FDOT doesn't really manage or own and operate a transit system, you don't see much funding or interest, like you're mentioning, on their part.
Question about that. Did there used to be much funding or interest or focus on alternatives?
I don't know too much of the history of the program, though, but I know.
Sure. Going back to the transportation alternatives, that is a defined funding amount that we get, so that's why you can see it at that low. That's a specific program. These are sections, so it's not really the type of project as much. So there are other transportation alternatives, non-motorized facilities that you see, especially in the local assistance program that you've all seen before. A lot of those are pedestrian bicycle improvements. When it comes to major projects, like CIS capacity or these other MAPDOT motor projects, for the most part, those would be roadway capacities, and then they'll, you know, add on headlight to those projects if they can. But if you were going to look at actual non-motorized transportation on this list right here, you're looking at local initiatives program and then transportation alternatives program as the bulk of that money.
Yeah, TA.
And then local initiative development.
And ally. Yeah, but those are the two that would be seen non-motorized. And they're grant funded, and it's a competitive process, and we see it each year, so.
Yeah, I think the point is, if you look at both local initiatives and a transportation alternatives, the amount of state funding is vanishingly small.
Yeah. That is true. Significant change.
Can I ask you, I'm sorry, before you turn the page.
Yes.
I know it's small, but what is the Seaport sliver of money there for?
Seaport, there is some activity at the Seaport. There is a couple projects that are being programmed.
Relating to the railroad?
As I recall looking at the projects, I think there was some paving work in and around the Seaport.
Yeah, they're doing work. Basically, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
They're just doing stuff at the Seaport.
Thanks.
But it's minimal. There's only one or two projects. It's not a lot. There's more being done at airports, surprisingly. That's what I noticed this time around. Significant changes, and these significant changes, they are reflected in the CIS capacity and the amount of money that is put towards it. On I-95, there'll be work being done in future years in 2024 at North Lake Boulevard, Boynton Beach Boulevard, Linton Boulevard, and Gateway Boulevard, and also on the Turnpike, the West Palm Beach Service Plaza to Okeechobee Boulevard will be widening 8 lanes, and they added a construction year for 2024. And then lastly, there will be work at High Fluxo Road. There's a new interchange being planned and designed there, and that's moved from 20 to 24. So that's pushed, the design has been pushed out to 24.
Where is the West Palm Beach Service Plaza? Where exactly is that?
On the Turnpike.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Oh, the one right.
It's the Lakeport.
Just by
the
Lakeport
Service Plaza.
Just by Lakeport.
Yeah, I have there's a map here, but
it's about half mile north of Lakeport. On the Turnpike.
Okay.
Yeah, down. Well, it's a little shady here, so you can't really see it.
Up.
It's up from there, right?
West. West. Keep going west. Further north here.
Around here, maybe?
So
I'm still getting
one more
here.
On this place. You're close to a little further.
But it's, okay.
Around
where
that's
right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Getting like where this palm is like.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm racking. Looking for it in my brain, I couldn't find it. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So, from last month, one of the things I promised was to map all the projects from construction year.
Can you go back a second to the slide you just had up?
Yep.
All these changes are delays. Was anything moved forward?
Some of the ally and TA projects, their funding became available, and those were advanced. Some of those local initiative and transportation alternative projects were advanced. But any of the FDOT projects I noticed, those were either delayed, or if FDOT got involved with the project, if they became the manager of the project, then they seemed to be pushed, delayed, just because of the workload and resources FDOT, and just it takes a little longer for them to vet and flush out the project and administer it. So I've noticed that.
So we're not leaving money on the table unused?
No.
I don't know. You mean from a? MAPDOT never leaves money on the table. So if we don't have something, something's always in the pipeline. So they are always pushing money around. It can be difficult for us to show you everything that happens when it comes to 95 Turnpike. A lot of those projects, those big strategic intermodal system projects, they'll start pushing things around year to year. And so you see this one. It looked like a few got delayed, but other ones came in. So. Boynton Beach and Linton both had construction funded in 24, and that's the new fifth year. And then it delayed North Lake Gateway to 24. So it looks like that's their timeline out of that schedule. So it seems like you've been them all.
But I guess, Bill, to go more to your point of your question, if they're delaying projects here, are they taking funds available in that year and putting them on a project in Markland property?
Right.
When you say they move it around, do they move it around in Palm Beach County or do they move it around in the district?
And that's a good point. It'd be district.
It'd be district, okay.
Not all, especially these projects that are CIS projects because they're, you know, the state priorities. Yeah. So they sort of get them when they're prioritized.
But again, with the money they've got, and the money is needed for these projects, the money will be there. They're not delaying this because they don't have the money. Wait a minute.
So the maps just give you a physical, you know, it gives you a geographic representation of what kind of construction we could see in 2020. And in the next week or so, I'll have the following 4 years that are included in the TIP document. So I'll map out the rest of the document by construction year so you can see how the construction is progressing, how the projects are progressing up to construction. And you can physically, you'll be able to actually see where construction will be happening over the next 5 years. But it takes a little while to make the maps just to vet all the information and all the projects, just to make sure everything is accurate. So, and that's the benefit of having the maps, is physically seeing the projects, taking them from a spreadsheet to a map, really adds relevance to geographically where do they sit in the county, how many they are, and what years are they being constructed. That's all I have for you. If you have any more questions.
Just a general one, just focusing on 95, I don't know how to dovetail it into the four items that you have there, but 95 between Glades and Okeechobee, very rough, a lot of rough patches, a lot of potholes, a lot of worn off road. I take it that not all of that is going to get remedied between now and a year from now.
Yes.
Right now it's like a flimsy patchwork here and there, covering maybe part of the damage, but most of the road is in really bad shape. Why is that?
There is a project in here for resurfacing I-95 from...
I see that from Lantana down to Boynton.
There's a gateway boulevard to Lantana, is that?
Yeah.
That's one level space, well, but the rest of it is bad.
Haven't they worked on a portion from Gateway South this year to Atlantic?
I'm just making sort of a general,
yeah, it's
general observation rough. From Glades up to Okeechobee is generally bad.
Yeah, there's some rough
language. So I take it that isn't all going to be on the drawing board to get remedied this coming year.
Gateway to Lantana, but that's all
that. Yeah.
But is it all the Glades?
Gateway to Glades is still going to be.
It just says resurfacing, and then it's $12.8 million.
Yeah, that's just a smaller piece of the larger.
Nick was on either the news or in the Post about saying that there was a section done this year, there'll be a section next year, and I'm sure they're going to be working on
it. My sense of it is, just generally speaking, resurfacing is done less often than it used to be. Would that be right? Less frequently.
Resurfacing is done based on the pavement index.
Yeah, the condition of it.
I don't know anything about that. Just from an observation.
Yeah,
I mean, the highways.
And so that's what I'm telling you. If the index doesn't warrant that they resurface, they're not going to resurface the road. And hence why maybe you see this as the infrequently.
There's a roughness index, and you know, you're feeling it when you're driving it, but go out and see. There's an index, so if it's rough enough, then they'll program it.
I think you're absolutely correct about the section from basically between Atlantic and Woolbright and up. That section appears to have been delayed further than it should have appeared to have been. And I think that's why they're doing those two sections now. And they made another section. But I agree. It is pretty rough.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Thank you.
On the LRTP update, I noted that...
That's coming up next.
Oh, the 10-year. Okay.
Yeah, once, so at this point, just asking for a recommendation to approve the TIP and advance it to the governing board.
I think I had a motion recommend to approve as presented. Do you want to add, Jim, your focus on I-95 in that area to the motion?
Well, I think it's a good suggestion. How would I do that?
We can just add it to the motion.
This is the TIP that started last fall, or last summer.
Right.
Okay. It's gone from here to the governing board.
And back.
To the FDOT.
Okay.
To the legislature.
So I'm putting a motion without modification to approve.
That's fine. We only have so much time.
This has been approved by the legislature.
Got it. So my motion is...
Motion, Michelle, second.
So it's an outcome of a year's effort, so you can't change it.
I didn't.
Because they tried to change it 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4.
Mr. Chair.
And as FDOT said, you can't change it.
Mr. Chair, let me speak. I have to leave at 2:30.
Okay.
So I want to make sure we maintain quorum, because it's another long agenda, if I could.
Okay. So
I did too as well.
What's that?
I have to leave as well.
Okay.
So whatever, they're suggesting whatever voted items we need to do.
Right. So we need a motion to recommend adoption.
It was motion by me.
A motion.
Okay. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. Or opposed.
Okay. One opposed.
Okay.
Next.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Andrew Euler. I wanted to discuss the short-range plan for our long-range transportation plan update. So this is going to be the out to 2030. And what we provided to you all for handouts is two things. Just a quick map of what those products will look like, pending approval and moving forward to our final approval in October. And then we have a table that shows you the desires list that you saw last month, but also is separated into the 10-year plan first, and then the rest of those desires products that still haven't been put into different tiers. So we'll be coming to you next month as well with the 2045 entire possible plan. So how this is created is it takes desires plans, projects, and then we forecast revenue out, and then we put them into their funding tiers. Just to rehash our vision, when we do this often, a safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal transportation system. So in this plan, we're really trying to push safety, efficiency, connectivity, and multimodal system throughout everything that we're doing here. I'm just going to go really quickly through some of the desired plans again, just to refresh your memory about what those were and some updates we had. We came to you all with our pedestrian analysis, which is based on propensity, and that's where people live, work, play, and learn. And so we have like a heat map of that, and then we figure out where we're missing facilities. And so that's what you see as our tier one projects. So there's sidewalk gaps in high propensity areas. And then we added a tier two, which is tier 1B really, is still high propensity, but maybe there's also existing sidewalk, but maybe it's not wide enough. Maybe it needs a buffer. And that way it provides a decrease to the level of traffic stress that a pedestrian might feel out there so they can use that facility more comfortably. And then the last tier system, tier two, are all the remaining sidewalk gaps within the urbanized boundary. How this will factor into our program moving forward is, Jason mentioned the local initiatives program and the transportation alternatives program. We're going to update scoring, as well as some other things in that scoring system, with this tiered system to sort of give more prioritization points towards a facility on this network. Bicycle
bicycle, a very similar approach. We use that same propensity analysis, but for bicycle facilities. Our approach to this one is we try to push for the best facility we can to get out there if we can. So starting from pedestrian, or separated where possible, buffered, where we can't have a separated, and then down to a designated. And the reason we want to do this is because our complete streets design guidelines calls for separated where possible. And the reason we do that is because, you know, we talked about it last time around, but that chart in the back of the room says attitudes towards cycling. To get to that amount of people who are interested but concerned riders, which is makes the bulk of people who may use a facility if they have that level of protection and comfortability out there, we want to actually shift our mode choice to more biking. We're really going to need to provide that those type of facilities. So again, this is going to be used in our local initiatives, transportation terms analysis and scoring to sort of chip away at this network. Transit, we have proposed 5 north-south corridors, 6 east-west, and then this is 1 connected premium transit system, so it's our area code 561. But we already have existing tri-rail, we have extension to the tri-rail in there, we have the US-1 multimodal corridor set we have already created, and we have a premium transit, bus rapid transit light on that. We have Congress Avenue, Military Trail, and then the east-west, so Okeechobee, Forest Hill, Lake Worth, Boynton Beach, Atlantic, and Glades. And those are on the map here going east to west. Roadway, we took our TPA projects that we still have for roadway capacity from our existing long-range transportation plan. A lot of them you're already familiar with because most of these are already under construction or set to be under construction or are being programmed. So State Road 7 extension, and also the widening of the southern piece. Atlantic Avenue widening. We have the U.S., and then the two that you may not be familiar with from a, it's not the tip, but we have the U.S. 27 connector and Hooker Highway. And that's this piece out here in the Glades. And it's more servicing with more economic development focus. And then we have the strategic intermodal system roadways. And Jason, you saw that huge amount of funding that's going towards SIS. Well, a lot of those are on this desires plan coming from the SIS system. And that's turnpike managed lanes, their interchanges, I-95 managed lanes and their interchanges, State Route 80 elevated expressway, and then out here in the Glades, there is a US 27 freight capacity project. And the cost estimate that FDOT has right now is for truck only lanes. So that may be what that ends up being.
Was the decision already made to elevate State Road 80?
They did an analysis for alternatives, and that was the preferred alternative. So the decision hasn't been made from a...
Yeah, I went to the meetings. I didn't realize the decision. So a decision has not been made.
Formally through us, no.
Okay.
But we're showing it to you as an elevated expressway because that was the preferred alternative.
Okay.
We didn't want to just say capacity improvement, and then you guys were like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden it's an elevated expressway. You know, we wanted to be as transparent as possible. Okay, so that was the desires. Those are all going out to, there is no time frame on those. I just wanted to show that those are all the ones that if there's a need established, and then they're not put into any bands yet, so it doesn't matter about the cost.
Just had a question, and looking at the map on transit desires, if you pop back there, one of the things that I see in terms of particularly east-west transit service, I mean, they're going to be running an extension of Tri-Rail out to the VA hospital. But if I were to look at a desire beyond the desire of mass transit, would be some shorter east-west routes up there from some of those other Tri-Rail stations potentially to the VA hospital. Because if you're coming from the north on Tri-Rail, you've got to go all the way down to West Palm to go back out to 40th District. And it looks like there'd be some opportunities there along Blue Heron or North Lake or some of those places where there's some tri-rail stations to get people west a little farther, particularly related to the VA hospital. And I don't know if there's been any, you know, again, this is vision and it's farther out there. But as I see the Northern Tri-Rail developing, I can see a greater need for potentially some east-west bus routes.
Sure, and I think, I'm not sure if that would be
if you're looking around right here, if we had possibly a I think it's the military on this side,
yeah.
Road, bus rapid transit to serve from a node up here on PJ Boulevard to go to that Blue Heron Boulevard one, or maybe our local transit system can provide that.
Yeah.
But you are correct, though. I mean, if you want to keep it, you want to sort of have that premium transit service from, you know, your stop up here all the way down and not have to go all the way down to West Palm Beach and then go all the way back up.
Because you're going to Ankonia Park now, right?
Yeah, so. Okay, you made a note and look into that as well. Okay. So those are the desires, and I said there's no, we're not trying to fit those into any cost feasible list yet. And so what we're doing now is we're going to show you some revenue estimates, and then after that we'll show you our 2030 draft cost feasible and what we can actually accomplish. So the revenue forecasting. This is going to be a little complex, and I know some of you believe at 2:30, so I'm going to try to do my best. It's very difficult to sort of go through all these documents and understand, and it's hard to articulate. So I might ask for some staff help if I misspeak. But what we did as a staff is we do have FDOT revenue estimates that come in to forecast for us out 2045. We as a staff, with those for a variety of reasons. They like to lump a lot of project funding sources together, and so we sort of lose track of where those funding, how it can actually be spent, and then the projections seem to be very high compared to what we're actually seeing. So what we did is we took the program amounts from 2017 all the way to 24, and we looked at it from a state perspective, from the work program, where the funding's going for major categories, and from a county perspective of where that funding's going. So what you're seeing on this list are the funding categories at the top are some of the major ones that we see at the state level, but we're showing you the county version of it. And this is the county funds we get per year from 2017 to 2024. The first one, I'm just gonna go to the numbered ones. The first one is the National Highway Performance Program. So this is federal funds that mostly can be used in a variety of ways, and I'll show you the next slide. But FDOT's CIS program has made a decision to use those specifically on the CIS system. So we talk about this big 95 projects, and we talk about Beeline Highway. You may be seeing some NHPP funds on that. But it could actually be used for other items instead. Secondly, SCPU, that's going to be Surface Transportation Program Urbanized Area. That's what we use for the Local Initiatives Program. And it will be roughly around $20 million a year, you see down here the total, goes towards that funding amount. And so we sort of have that set aside for people to submit to us for competitive grant applications, and we fund that through priorities. The third one we wanted to mention was the Highway Safety Improvement Program. We've had a discussion with all of our committees before about Vision Zero and how do we fund projects moving forward. Our goal is to figure out how we can formalize our process and prioritization of safety projects and sort of get at this $120 million a year that FDOT uses at the statewide level to program, right? So the county has a lot of initiatives they want, and other local governments as well, where they would like to start seeing some of that money prioritized on their roadways and not just the state highway system. So what you see here for HSP, we do get money in here, but that's FDOT giving that money to products on their system. Lastly, National Freight Program. There's another federal program out there. The state receives $60 million a year. We, in FDOT selects those products. We haven't really had any of those prioritized in our area, and you can see here the 7 years of program that we're showing, we don't have any money. So that's another one we want to sort of tackle moving forward. And here's the eligibility of what you just saw, the four I just talked about. And you can see the program and their full names, and then sort of what the different types of products you can use it on. So National Highway Performance Program has to be used on the National Highway System, and that's how they're being used by FDOT, but those are mostly going towards roadway capacity. There is potential to use, and they're going through O&M as well, but there is potential to use it for transit construction if you're on the National Highway System. For example, a lot of those corridors are just having a desires plan. You could theoretically, as long as it has a purpose of assisting the roadway with congestion and mobility, you could use it towards transit. Surface Transportation Program, very flexible. We use that right now as for our $20 million towards our local initiative program, highway safety improvement program for road construction and design, and then national highway freight program, also for some roadway construction needed for, and another freight capacity program. State funds, same setup for this table as the other one. This is showing our county totals. This one can be even more confusing than the last one, but I'm going to do my best to explain it. The first one I wanted to show was this thing called district dedicated revenue, and you will see a lot of the CIS capacity projects and a few of our major projects, like Atlantic Avenue and State Route 7, use this district dedicated revenue. And what this is the gas tax that goes to the state, and it's supposed to be spent in the county where it's collected to the maximum extent feasible. But we looked at the collections for Palm Beach County, it should be around $55 million a year. Well, the 7 years we have programmed from 2017 to 2024, the amount programmed in our county has only been around $43.6 million. So there's a shortfall there. When you add it up to the amount in 5 years of a TIF, that could be a substantial amount. So there is a shortfall there that we're thinking, well, maybe we should work with FDOT a little more to figure out, are we using these in the best place possible? So if they're not being spent in our county, they do have to be spent in the district. So that could be Broward and some of our northern counties. But that's just something to note. And what I wanted to mention real quickly too is this DDR plus DS. This CIS means the Strategic Highway System. This non-CIS, that's our funding that we're using towards our cost feasible plan, the major products. And it's about $19 million a year, almost 20. That's the funding that we're funding for Atlantic Avenue, State Route 7. And you can see that that money does, that same funding source also goes towards CIS capacity, and it goes towards a variety of other things. So those funds are sort of competing for the same, for different outcomes. So we've seen a lot of shortfalls in our priorities, and that's because there's other priorities moving forward that maybe are more program ready from the FDOT perspective, but we do see a shortfall there of what we were expecting to see.
Question. So there are about 12 or 13 million of the 55 million collected here is not spent here. Is that right? Did that summarize correctly?
Yes, from the analysis that we did about
the state's making that decision, right?
Yes.
Have we objected, complained, talked about, mm-hmm. expressed concern?
Yes, so when
what
you
do
see,
they say?
Mm-hmm. So you're going to see a term I always use a lot. It's called program ready, and that means FDOT will not program one of our prioritized product list unless it's program ready. So it has to have everything, like all its ducks in a row. And we have projects that don't really fit the mold of like a roadway capacity all the time, which is sort of easier to push forward, it seems like, than our other projects. So a lot of the projects on our priority list, and if you see in the TIP handout from before, the summary, we have some lane repurposings on US 1. We have Tri-Rail's extension to Jupiter, right? We have a few other ones, Okeechobee Boulevard, multimodal study. All those sort of need other things in place for them to be program ready, is what FDOT would say. So for example, for Tribal Coastal, Coastal Link and the extension to Jupiter, needs to have the local funding sources in place to pay for capital, and then it also needs to have operations and maintenance revenue available. When it comes to a CIS capacity product on the interstate, they're already accounting for the operations and maintenance, and they're already putting that in the system, right? So when you widen the interstate or the turnpike, it's sort of already expected to be paid for through their own system. Whereas transit capacity products don't really do that. So FDOT, even though we're trying to prioritize these projects, FDOT's saying we're not going to prioritize them because you don't have these things made out.
Thank you. Makes sense.
I have a quick question. So the higher allocation that you're seeking for us for proof of the existing and federal revenue, is it because of the shortfall or what is it because of?
Oh, we're asking for proof today?
Yeah.
What we're asking for proof today is going to be sort of the amount of money that we're going to show that could possibly go towards our major products list every year, which is going to be the $19 million. And then We also have our surface transportation funds, which is $20 million, and the transportation alternatives, $3 million. And then that's basically what we have to work with. What we provided in the packet was also a resolution, and what that resolution entails is to make sure that this CIS funding, that's DDR and DS, that we're actually getting the portion that we should be getting for our major projects. On this other one, I don't want to, I know it's sort of noise for you all, but it's very important information to sort of know. I know it's difficult to comprehend it in this table, but there are also other major funding sources that we need to be make sure we're tracking. But we're not really guaranteed those funding sources as much. But we wanted to make it of note, so we can give you the whole gamut of how much it costs to run a transit system and operations and maintenance and where the money's going. So when it comes to what I was saying about this one, you know, they compete with CIS and our major projects. At the statewide level, the funding is about 47%, for the county, it's about 47% of the total of DDR-DS. Statewide average is only about, it's less than 30%. So they are using more money on the CIS than they are in our area, percentage-wise, than they are statewide. So we, based on the other MPOs, so there's less being allocated towards our major projects and more towards CIS than we see in other areas. Thirdly, and this is sort of a complicated one of domino effect, this DPTO is public transit funding, and it can go towards it goes towards transit a little bit for operations and maintenance, but it can also be used for airports and seaports and rail. And what happens sometimes is that those are sort of prioritized, you know, yearly. And sometimes there's more priorities than others in that gets submitted for the airports and rails and seaports. So, for example, the airports, when they submit more projects, they might actually take some of that DPTO funding away from the transit operations. And then what happens then is, because CAFDOT needs to meet that transit operations amount that they give to our locals, they'll use district dedicated revenue for transit. And so that's just a practice they have in place. What we have in a resolution for you all today was to sort of tell them to not do that and sort of chip away and make this DPTO a set aside for transit already and not try to make up the difference every time using the district dedicated revenue, because that's what we're trying to use to fund our bigger projects. And then the last one to mention is going to be a called NSTP as an abbreviation, but this is New Starts Transit Program, and it's about $35 million a year at the state level. And this is what we're really going to have to try to focus on if we're going to move forward with some of our transit facilities and sort of go after that revenue source. It's a competitive source of funding, but we haven't received any in this program in 7 years, so something that we're going to be pushing for in the future.
And why haven't you received it?
This is one of those ones. For example, our major priority, the extension to Jupiter, it goes back to sort of having those other things stuck in a row of operations and maintenance in place and the local contributions, because those programs still require a local match. And so once we have all set in stone, we can move forward and try to go after these grants as well.
So do you think that's going to be feasible over the next few years as far as local match?
I can get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a sort of a game plan for that. I'll get that in a few slides. And we'll be presenting on that in a few months as well. But make sure I answer that question before we leave today. Project eligibility for the state. Same target time as before. DDR, DS, DPTO, the new starts. And you can see where it can be spent on. Right? And then you can see transit's in there, but they're all matches. You need to have a local match for all of these. Local funds, we wanted to show this to you all just for some reference purposes. Kind of hard to read, there's a lot on there. I'm just going to highlight the major ones here. Impact fees, you may be aware of. Those are road impact fees that we collect time of development. They go towards road. The one you're seeing here is just for roadway capacity increments. It's around $12.8 million a year, and those have to be used within the zone they are collected. We have the infrastructure sales tax, which will expire in 2026, but what you're seeing here is the $19.2 million a year that goes towards the transportation side of that that sales tax, and that goes towards mostly resurfacing and bridges. That's why it's an O&M roadways. We have all of our gas taxes there, and then last one is a carry forward of the gas tax that hasn't been spent yet, but it's still going to be spent as well towards transportation projects, road projects. Let's just give you an idea of some of those major funding sources that are utilized here at the local level.
Do you anticipate Uber fees? I see you have Uber fees up there.
Oh, user fees. User fees.
It looks like Uber to me.
They probably do have a tax on it. I don't know where that goes for.
I'm like, oh, Uber's paying.
And then here's a breakdown of how the funding is eligible for things. And this sort of gets into that whole, where are we going to find this match for transit and other things if we need local matches, for federal, state grants. Road impact fees, you know, those can also be used mostly just for capacity on the road right now. We have local option gas tax, which a lot of that is already used on transit for operations and maintenance, a good portion of it, but it can be used for other sources of the match. Infrastructure tax has to be towards mostly, the one in place right now is towards maintenance, but it could be used towards other items. And then one that doesn't exist would be another surtax, such as a transportation surtax that we currently don't have, but whatever is voted up on that could be voted for the citizen to be, you know, whatever it was meant to be used for. Okay, so that was a breakdown of the eligibility, and then here's the cost feasible plan. And so this is only what we can sort of accomplish.
Wait, yeah. Just want to warn, 7 minutes until they leave, so if you need approval, I'm just giving that a plan.
Okay. That'll be a tough one. Bicycle. As I mentioned, we're prioritizing with our surface transportation funds for local initiatives and transportation alternatives. That's around $23 million a year, and we set that aside for those purposes, and that's what you all recommend for approval to our board every year. And you'll actually be seeing that in a few months as well, the new ones. Transit corridors. All of our current transit revenues support operations and maintenance, right? So what they get to use Palmtran and Tri-Rail, they're using up to support their existing services. So what we need to do is look at other competitive grant programs to sort of figure out how we can fund capital and figure out where we can figure out operations and maintenance and how to pay for that. And it might take some local revenues. And like I said, right now in our cost feasible plan, we have nothing to show for you, because to be in a cost feasible plan, you have to have your ducks in a row with this. To be cost feasible, you have to have the operations and maintenance in place. So we'll be presenting to you all in the future about that, about how we can make this cost feasible. So right now, you can't do any of this without a local matching revenue source of funding from the locals. Potential funding sources. I mentioned before the National Higher Performance Program, but that would reduce the amount of money we'd be able to assist funding. We could use our money that we use for local initiatives, the SU funds, but you'd be taking from that pot of money. And then there are some state sources, DDR, DS, and that transit source, but that also requires a non-federal share match or a local match. Some local strategies that we could try to look into, and we might try to do a small section in our LTP about potential ones in the future, would be a transportation surtax, tax increment financing if you wanted to start to get to the land use level. And then potentially mobility fees, which in some places would be also on that land use level as well. So what we need to do, and we'll be coming to you in a few months, is a scenario plan implementation, which is looking at these funding strategies, building a coalition around our transit desires plan and how to actually fund those, if those are our final priorities, and then how we can fit everything we're doing within the current utilization of current funding. So what grants can go out there that are already out there, and how we work in the current FDOT system, some new local funding sources, and then recommendations for law changes and how we want to use state funding. Wait.
3 minutes.
Okay. And what you see on this map is just going to be what we have for 2030. We have a multimodal corridor study on Okeechobee Boulevard there, and then we have extension of Tri-Rail. Roadway and grid projects, we have the CIS, and then how it's funded right there. And then, as I mentioned, that's competing with some of the funding from our PPA priority products. So they fund their things mostly first, and then we get the remainder of that. So we want to sort of shift that around and be more equal. And then how the county funds their products, local option gas tax, road impact fees. And then here is the final map. And this is a handout for you all. Here's the roadway projects. A lot of CIS projects, as I mentioned, 95. A lot of managed lanes projects. We have...
We have to take a vote.
Okay.
Because we won't have a quorum.
Okay.
Unless you can wait until next
week. Well, so...
No, you can't.
How many was lines? I understand.
A few, but you still have to get discussion as well, right? So...
Well, let's have a motion to approve recommended adoption of the 10-year plan.
So moved.
I'll second it. And may my suggestion be, unless there's major discussion, just to go ahead and approve it, and we can discuss after.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, next is the resolution.
No, we can still have discussion.
No, no.
No?
We have another.
Oh, that's right. There's two in there. You're right. Oh, okay.
I'll discuss some of the
2B5, which is basically the MPO in your document wrote a letter to FDOT basically talking about what you just described about our unfunding of our county resolution.
So moved. It's just the formality of what we approved.
A motion to approve.
So moved.
Second. I would like a discussion on this. Where is that? What are you talking
in
about?
The document. 2B5.
It's a resolution.
It's just a resolution of the formality of what we approved.
No, what we talked to the area. Yeah. There it is. That's the letter.
I see.
And it will be signed. What we're doing is we're recommending to the board that they approve this.
Right. So moved.
Okay. A motion to approve. A motion to recommend approval of 2B5.
She moved it.
There was a motion.
You seconded it.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that was a motion by who?
Me.
Michelle.
Tina.
Second by
Tanu.
Okay.
Tanu. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll continue our meeting.
And for clarification for you all, you will see this stuff again, so don't worry about that. It is vital. Information. Next month we'll have the 2040 plan, 2045, and then we are going to be final adoption in October. So you will see it again. Okay. Can you go back to the other?
Yeah. Why don't we go back?
Sure. I know today's a lot of, some would say boring, revenue stuff, so I want to mention. We have our roadway projects. This is the map. This is the final map right here of all our projects for 2030. And you'll see that there's not many transit projects on there. We have the layover facility, which is going to be up here, the northern layover facility that SFRTA has. The rest are going to be the capacity projects on the roadway. The CIS projects, $3.1 billion in this 2030 plan. A lot of these are in the TIP already, which is the first 5 years of our 2030 plan. That's all those interchanges on 95. We have our managed lanes on the turnpike and a few interchanges as well that are included in those managed lanes. We have a State Road 80 and State Road 70 interchange. And then we have Beeline Highway, which is already in the transition improvement program. So major capacity projects, $3.1 million. TPA prioritized projects, I mentioned how we fund those. They sort of compete with the CIS funding. And then we're getting, what we're recommending to you all for our forecast is only $19 million a year. This is a much shorter revenue forecast than what the FDOT would say. They say we should be getting $40 million a year, but we haven't seen that actually come out in the amount we're getting. So we cut that in half based on our analysis, which won't hinder us really about our prioritization. We can always push more priorities to them, and if they fund more, great. But we wanted a more realistic forecast, and we think $19 million right now is a more realistic forecast. What those projects look like, a lot of them are already existing. State Road 7 extension, Atlantic Avenue, widening, and then out in the Glades, we have the US 27 connector, which is this road right here, 27, and then the Hooker Highway widening right there. Those are the only ones that we're showing for our prioritized capacity, $213 million. County capacity, we took the county's list of projects that they forecast they want to see. We actually whittled it down based on the needs we thought were there, and we're still going to be meeting with the county to discuss a way forward to make sure that we both have the agreed upon list to put in our LRTP. But those are all the ones in the blue, and those are all capacity projects as well. Out there in the western central communities, north of Boulevard, there's a few. Oakshore Boulevard, Lyons Road down here. So those are all the blue ones. Central County Agricultural Reserve in southwest unincorporated areas. $212 million. And that's it. You know, we didn't have many transit products in there. Just like I said, the Northern Layer facility. And so what we want to do for you all in the next steps moving forward is present a forecast for 25 years out, which is going to be the 2045 plan, next month in July. And then in the scenario planning and implementation plan, we want to provide to you all, well, this is the framework we're currently working in. How do we get everything else to our cost feasible list? How do we get these other multimodal improvements to start moving forward into the work program and getting those really prioritized and on the way for us? And it's going to take a lot of coordination to do that, to get those local revenue sources in place and to figure out which funding pots we can go after. And that is the conclusion of the presentation.
Questions?
I have a question. I don't know if it's directly related to this. It's about the gas tax, missing gas tax money. Can I ask that now, or you want to?
Of course.
All right. Well, my question is, the TPA is made up of the governing board, is the county commissioners, and a certain number of cities. Does the director of the TPA have the authority to go out and talk to state legislators and offer them model bills to be introduced to get our money back?
Good question. We cannot use any federal or state funds that we get for planning to go towards more funding towards, that's federal and state funds, right?
How would you be spending funds?
We can't lobby for pushing for more funds. We can do, what we can do in two methods is we pass resolutions and the board passes that sort of pushes on legislatures that way and on FDOT. And that's how we do it formally through that. And then the other alternative.
Pushing on FDOT doesn't count. It needs to push on the other's legislators.
Okay.
South Florida versus the rest of the
yep.
state.
And then the other way would be we have our new system when we go independent, is that where you're going?
Yeah.
Okay. The new system when we go independent is no longer going to be money from just the county paying. It's going to be a fee collected from all municipalities. And so with that money, there's going to be less strings attached to how we can spend that. So it won't be federal and state funds. That would be a pot of money that we could actually go and have a lobbyist push for certain things. That's what we choose to do as a board. As a TPA. So that
okay.
would be a way forward.
I hadn't even thought about a lobbyist. I was just thinking, you know, Nick going and talking to a state senator or state rep and going, hey, you get six bills a year that you could, how about using this on something, one of your six bills for something useful?
Sure. I think that's a potential. I don't know the gray area of that and when it's considered inappropriate, I guess. I'm not versed in that.
Yeah, but usually.
Who makes the decision that we get 43 versus 55? Is it the legislature? Is it FDOT, the state, or is it FDOT district?
That is FDOT district, and it's a combination of everybody. But what happens is there's products that are submitted in a priority list to FDOT, and FDOT's also working on their CIS products at the same time. And right now, the way it's been playing out is those CIS products have been pushing faster than any of our major products because they consider our products not program ready, whereas a lot of their 95 products they say are program ready.
What's the district again? What's it
called? District 4. Yes, so that's going to be Broward County, Palm Beach, Martin, and St. Lucie,
and
Indian River. Okay.
Quick question. Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay.
55 tax, 42 we get spent on us. And I think you mentioned that the reason was that there were projects that we may have had in the pipeline, but we're not necessarily ready to go. I'm using the wrong language, but that's what it added up to.
Yes.
It's project ready.
Project ready, okay. Natural question is, why weren't enough projects? I'm not suggesting anybody's not doing their job. I'm just saying, why weren't enough projects ready so that we could consume the 55? How does that happen? I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong or just doing their job, but just how does that work?
That is a good question. We submit our priority list to them, and it had a whole list, and it has the needs on there. What happens is
Who's we?
Oh, the TPA. TPA.
Our county.
Our TPA board.
In our county.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yes. I'll make sure I don't say the word people.
Yeah.
TPA board submits this list about half a year ago, right? For this upcoming TIP. They look at the list, and then they say, oh, this one's not ready, this one's not ready, this one's not ready. And that's sort of what we find out. And then they program the other products to consume those funds.
That's when you find out what exactly?
That these products aren't programmed.
They're not project ready.
So.
Well, who does know whether a project is project ready?
Good question.
You say we don't know.
Who does know? That's been the disconnect because what happens is we have a priority list. We give it to FDOT. FDOT comes back with their draft tentative work program and says, TPA, I know we received your priority list. We did not prioritize these products for these reasons. And they provide us a formal letter saying why. And we can provide it to you again for reference if you'd like. In that letter, it says, lane repurposing products, about 4 or 5 in 1 on US 1. All these need city resolutions before we even want to touch them, put them in the work program. That's what they had for the lane repurposing. Tri-rail extension to Jupiter. We're not going to fund it because, we're not going to fund the PD&E yet because you don't have operations and maintenance in place, and then you still need to figure out your FEC issues with using that corridor, the fee you have to associate with running the FEC. So there's all these things that sort of pop up that are not always technically in the rules, but it's sort of what makes it, after that makes a determination, we're like, yeah, we're not comfortable with you, us programming that those funds yet. And that's what happens, but like, oh, we are comfortable with these CIS products.
And through the chair, I guess the point of some of this is, the reason that some of these projects don't get funded is the DOT is going, you don't have all your ducks in a row. And because it's multi-jurisdictional, there may be several ducks. They've got one duck. They put it down their road and they go. So the problem is their administrative process they've established is inherently biased against some of these projects because they've created all of these things and said, you've got to have all of these things. And so unless you're way down the road on all this stuff, it gives them a great opportunity to go, oh, you're missing one. Whereas, for their projects, they've got a lot fewer ducks. They're in charge of all of them. And it's much easier for them to get through their approval process than it is for some of these other things to get through the approval process. So I think there's an inherent bias. And if you want to talk about who you need to talk to, you talk to DOT about that process to make sure that everything they're requiring ahead of time actually has to be done ahead of time. Because you got to start taking some of those ducks out of that row and say, okay, we can get that later. And all of a sudden you've shortened your process and maybe you can get it done quicker. But I think that what's happening is just that. The process for these projects is so much longer that they're always going to be able to get in front.
Bill, is there a single document our governing board could pick up and look at all of our projects and say, these are ready to go and these aren't?
We do our best to provide that with our priority list, which is very very similar to what you see already. I don't know if you have a printout on TIF, but...
So there's a column in there that says ready to go or something equivalent?
It has been static, right.
Project ready. It's the keywords.
Yeah, we should, and I guess it sounds like a good idea to sort of have that as a way for you all to easily understand that. Yeah. We usually put that in the status column of our priority list, and if there's a status at the end that says why we didn't move forward with this, it'll say needs local resolution, needs local resolution, or it says for tri-rail extension, it should say needs O&M and it needs the user, the FAC fee figured out.
I'll make it very simple. I try to speak after Mike. State Road 7 last year had equipment at the extension to start project. They were project ready. They put equipment out there ready to break ground, and we're going to make it official. City of West Palm Beach did their intervene, and so it stopped. So then you're in that immediate moment where you now have $40 million that was allocated for that entire extension. So boom, what do? They did the best they could. They moved the funding over to Southern Boulevard. And so then there's a chunk that doesn't fit in the pie exactly when you're making that last minute. So it went somewhere within District 4. So they're trying to use the guidelines, as you suggested, to the best that they can. But in those situations, when something occurs just like that, you've got to do the best you can within those numbers. They're not going to be accurate, but they'll do their best. And that's where that was at. So I'm assuming the second alternative, as long as it's in District 4. But to Mike's suggestion, you could go back and ask the TPA governing board to write a letter, if you wanted to, just to FDOT for a clarification of that, so that all of us in the governing board can feel comfortable about where that $11 million went. But I'm quite confident they moved it over the Southern Boulevard project.
Well, what we're showing,
but that's a perfect example in our own backyard.
Right, but 2B5 is exactly that letter.
Right.
We just voted on for the recommended approval of the board to send this letter.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is that's why it doesn't always fit like a glove.
Of course.
Right. So as long as, to me, and if we're applying logic, as long as they're making sure that other project ready, funding, it goes there first before it moves outside of Palm Beach County,
right,
is the priority, and then spread within District 4. But that's the only reason why there's $11 million shortfall. So if you think about equipment ready to go July of 2018, and then boom, it was pulled, right? We know how slow government goes, and then they moved it over Southern Boulevard, and now it's June 2019, and we're about to go back to court in August of 2019, and this project is still considered project ready.
Now, the other part is that we've been discussing the extension to Jupiter for 10 years. So we don't have an approval from FEC to run on that court. So
it's not project ready.
Or if they come back and say, okay, you need to have these projects that you're asking for have approval from the municipality, then why put it in if you don't have that? I mean, it seems like the TPA is, you know, I don't understand why you would put a project in that needs a municipal approval if you don't have it.
Okay.
Or you clearly indicate it's not project ready.
Exactly.
I guess our only caveat to that is that we have so many projects that seem to be major priorities for the TPA that if we keep doing this, oh, it's not product ready, to keep pushing ones that are not really the main priorities into the system and getting funded when we're not really pushing our main priorities. If that makes
correct
sense.
In the one so that I'm suggesting, weird. It was project ready.
Oh, yeah. That's,
yeah.
That's a whole story. That's a whole song.
That's
a unique situation.
So, I guess.
We'll leave it there.
It's going to be difficult, but what I was envisioning, I think what we're envisioning for the LRTP is, when it comes to this cost feasible plan, and when you all are looking at this yearly, you see a priority list, it's like bundling into the cost feasible plan into the priority list, we want you all to have a tool, and our board and our other committees, have a tool that says, well, I see that this project is can be ready to go, what funding mechanisms are out there to get this done, and what tools are in place for us to actually make this project ready and fundable and just get it going, right? So I think we need a clear and concise document that can be that tool for you all. And it does take work because there's a lot of different funding codes or funding sources out there, and they all have their own strings attached, but that is our goal, is to provide transparency that says, these are our funding sources, and this is how we can utilize them to the best of our ability, and how we're utilizing now, and how can we really get this going.
Well, I don't see what FDOT's incentive is to change their programming at all. I think the only way they're ever going to change it, you club them over the head with something political. And I don't believe they operate in good faith, and I think they're changing the goalpost on you. And a lot of these projects I see, they start out, there's like, a five-year range, and the first part is just planning. And they're not even coughing up money for planning. So I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of these FDOT projects, are they held to the same accountability level about city commission resolutions and things like that? Or are they getting money before those kind of hoops that need to be jumped? You know, if you're still in the planning stages, if you want something done in 5 years, if you've got to do all these steps first, you've just delayed it 3 or 4 years. There's no, they're saying basically you can't do anything at the same time or multitask, shall we say. Does that apply to their projects too, or is it just the projects they don't like?
I guess I can't speak for HAPDOT because I
don't
work here.
Yeah.
Right. The way we see it though, a good example is this extension of Jupiter where the PD&E funds were, we wanted to prioritize them earlier. FDOT moved them back in the work program because we didn't have our ducks in a row. But they were really just PD&E. And the problem with that is, you're correct. The system in place is probably a little bit more streamlined for roadway capacity projects like Interstate and Turnpike and a few other assist projects. More so than these other type of multimodal products that we have that we're trying to prioritize, more so than only road capacity. Like Atlantic Avenue didn't really have too much of a problem getting to the system. It's still struggling to get funded in the outer years, but it's in the system at least. But you are correct where it is a struggle because they're asking us to get everything, our ducks in a row for operations and maintenance and other issues that take a lot of local support. And then what happens is, after that's like, okay, you finally got your ducks in a row. Well, here's money for planning in an outer year, and then you can expect the construction well past that, right? So by the time that actually product rolls around, you have entirely different political ball game or financial resources are different. So we are struggling with that, where it's like, like what you're saying, we need to have the planning funded, and we need to push on them to let us fund those so we can start going on these products and have it ready to go. When we actually have the funding available, we want to start building. So, but you are correct. I think it seems to be a more streamlined process for CIS capacity to make it into the work program versus a lot of the TPA.
I'm learning a lot about civil engineers, and they all have their own area of expertise, and they have no comfort zone outside of that. So if you got somebody that builds roads, they are black and white. They are never going to look at a train or a bike. And that's what you got in FDOT until you hit them upside the head with a 2x4, they're not going to change, is my opinion.
All right. One last question. On this LRTP update 10-year plan, you got PD&E, D, ROW, and CIST.
CST.
Yep.
So we need
CST.
What is D? Yep, so you're right, we need a legend. So going across, PD&E stands for Planning, Design, and Environmental, so that's like a larger planning focus. Then you get into the design for D.
Oh, okay.
ROW is going to be right-of-way, right, requires right-of-way acquisition, and then CST is short for construction.
Okay. Why is D not in PD&E?
A lot of times, that PD&E is going to be more that alternatives analysis. So, for example, state road 80, that's, they'll look at three or four alternatives, and then they'll go back more into design with the D design.
Okay. For alternatives.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next item is transit access plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Existing facilities, both pedestrian and bicycle facilities, and then we decided to conduct, we conducted walking audits for those with stakeholders and partner agencies such as the county, municipalities that have jurisdiction over the roadways, and FDOT in some cases. And the reason that we're doing this is to identify proposed modifications to promote a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. So the six locations that we had initially picked out, we tried to get them all over the county, so you can see the map, the stars are the different locations, pretty spread out. For West Palm Beach, we were focusing on the stop out at the Palm Beach Lakes outlets. For Boynton Beach, we were focusing on the stop on the west side of the Boynton Beach Mall. For Belleglade, it's the stop at the West County Jail. For Boca Raton, it's the stop right outside Town Center Mall. And for Riviera Beach, it's the stop right by the VA hospital, and for Delray Beach, it's a stop at the Publix at the Delray Plaza Shopping Center. So, all group county. And so when we were looking at these and trying to identify, the first step is that we had to identify the location. So this is a great example. This is West Palm Beach location, Palm Beach Lakes Outlets. So the star that you see on the screen is the bus stop location. So right there next to the outlets. After we identified the stop, we drew a half-mile radius around it to be able to identify the destinations and everything within that. So why people are going there, what's there. Within this location, we found there are the outlets, there are shops, there's Target Superstore, there's a Home Depot, there's a church, an elementary school, a community center, and a lot of residential units. So a lot of people go in here for a plethora of different reasons. After we had discovered why people are going there, we wanted to figure out the area, the length of the corridor we were studying. So based off of that and the walking distance that someone from at the outlets would want to walk, we decided that the best length would be from I-95, because that's a major access point, to Australian Ave. So encompassing everything here, all those residential units in that neighborhood, and again, everything that's located within that half-mile radius. So during our walking audits, we had lots of observations that we found. These are some pictures from it. So we found the lack of connected and marked pedestrian crossings. So you can see in this image here, there's no easy way to get across, or safe way to get across this intersection, both on this leg and on this leg. You can't really see the other legs, but there were no crosswalks there either. We also found a lack of bicycle facilities. If you look in the top left-hand corner, you see a bicyclist riding on the roadway. Looks like he's in the shoulder. It's not anything that's designated. No designated facilities along this corridor. So if someone's biking, let's say, from their house to that elementary school or to the shops to go work, they have no safe way to do that. Another observation was a lack of ADA facilities. So no pads at the intersections, as you can see here. There's no sort of sensory anything. So if someone's in a wheelchair or blind and they're walking down or using their stick to help identify where they're going, they don't really have any form of information saying, hey, you're about to cross an intersection. And lastly, the last big thing that we found was that there was really poor lighting. So when we did do these studies, we did go out there for that peak hour in the morning for commute times, and we did want to see what the stop and the area looks like without the daylight. So we took some pictures, and as you can see, there's poor lighting at night, and there's really low light conditions at the bus stops. that's actually a bus stop right there, and being there, it's pretty hard to see if you're not standing directly in that light. So some of the recommendations or proposed modifications that we had included a continuous bicycle facility throughout the entire stretch of the corridor. You see that in these plan views, this is 95 here, and it comes, and there's a bridge right here that goes over Lake Mangonia Canal, and then it continues over here. So we did, this area right here does have a frontage road that is under jurisdiction of the city of West Palm Beach, and they did provide input, which was adding a shared bicycle lane or sharrow along those frontage roads there. So that is something that was considered and taken into account. We are proposing also to mark all legs of all crosswalks. So you can see that in all crosswalks, on both of these, or in both of these plan views, we do have all legs of the crosswalks marked for pedestrian safety. Proposed modification was a mid-block crossing here. There's a pretty big stretch between these two intersections on Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard, and again, this is all residential around here. When we were out there, we noticed that in between, there were these two bus stops right here. And doing that field visit, we did witness multiple people try to run across that really busy roadway to get access to that other pair of that bus stop to go in that opposite direction. So we thought a really good addition to this.
I was trying to figure it out, too.
It's a signalized mid-block crossing right here.
But Australia is on the right side
this
of the bus.
Yes, so that's Australian. That's 7th.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And then we did include pedestrian scale lighting along the entirety of the corridor. So, modifications and next steps for us are to plan, prioritize, and fund the proposed modifications to create a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal network. So, that's really it.
We don't see the other four?
6, 5.
Well, there's 5. Where the other
one? No, there's 6 total.
Oh, the 6 total.
Yeah. Okay. So, we only wanted to show a snapshot, because if I included all of them, it would be very long.
I was kind of joking.
Okay.
Any questions?
Just real quick, so I'm assuming that is an excellent model of the applied models to the other.
Yes, so basically, for all of them, we're just trying to really show transit access improvements, so basically trying to make sure that it's safe for everyone of all ages and abilities to be able to access those stops. So it mostly is bicycle and pedestrian improvements, but it definitely does include ADA and stop improvements as well, so
okay.
Modifications.
All right, so now we have an idea. How do we go from today, where we have the idea, to funding?
Well,
so
that was our discussion
previously. Be nice to have some gas tax on hand.
My question is, who's responsible for each of those improvements? Which municipality or county is responsible or FDOT responsible for each one of those recommendations that you have in here?
We did try to focus on areas all over the county.
No, but let's focus in on on the one you just showed us.
So the one I just showed you is all under the county right-of-way. So this is all county, but it depends on which location you're looking at because it's different road ownership.
What I'm saying is let's take this one.
Okay.
And go through the process of who's responsible and how to get the process done to go from concept to funding.
Can you go to the next slide?
Yeah.
The next slide? That one?
No.
Keep going.
Oh, that one that shows this the road.
Okay. One more.
One more?
That one. Okay. So,
okay.
Palm Beach Lakes is a
county road.
It's a county road,
okay.
With the exception of the frontage roads here.
Okay.
It's basically us sitting down with a meeting with these stakeholders, so the city and the county, and saying these are the improvements that we recommend, and them needing funds and having to apply to us for funding.
Except if it's a county road, it doesn't. It's a TPA budget.
Yeah, we have our grant program, our local initiatives and transportation alternatives programs that they can apply to us to fund these improvements.
Okay.
We're kind of leading the horse to water by saying, hey, we looked at this. We have plan views of recommended modifications. Wouldn't it be great if you applied to us for funding and implemented this, or if you have funding, that'd be you can use that as well, but we are a funding source to implement this, but we need them to apply to us because they're the roadway owner.
Okay.
So we analyze this and we have proposed modifications and it's up to them to want to implement them, but we're showing them this would be, we identified this as proposed modifications that we think should be implemented to improve access to transit.
Okay. Now, what's the process for that? I mean, you come up, where do you come up with the financial monies, the amount of monies?
So in the plan we have, and it's available on the website, all of the locations, there's a table with cost estimates for each one of these improvements. So the roadway owner would apply to us if they want funding from us. They would apply to us for those funding amounts and say, we want to do this, and then they would be scored and ranked and would get a grant to do those improvements.
Okay. Now, the county is limited to 6, I think, for each year. Mm-hmm. Of the 6 that you have, how many are county?
Half are county exclusively. Another couple are county and city, and I believe there's
FDOT
one that
has
an FDOT
half,
road.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to come up with a plan of going forward to take these information you've generated to the county or the municipality or FDOT.
Yeah.
Okay.
If the county has 6 projects it can apply for, is this like a Christmas tree and there's a lot of sub-projects under it and it counts as one?
You mean this, like all
yeah, this project, so there's a lot of
this would be one project because they're saying we want to do
the whole strip. So you're doing this, you're doing that, you're doing lighting, you're striping, blah, blah, blah. So that's one project with 10 subcomponents, shall we say.
No, if you're redoing the road and you're adding bicycle facilities, sidewalks, you're moving lighting.
It's resurfacing.
Okay.
A lot of what we're saying it is a resurfacing project.
In some cases, sometimes applicants apply for just lighting along the road. But if you're doing, you can add multiple things under the same roadway line items.
Okay. Now, if this project involved the county and the city of West Palm Beach, mm-hmm. If you layer DOT on top of it, does the project get more complicated?
Always.
Well, to the point
it won't go anywhere.
No, because each entity owns a different roadway. So, for example, we've been in West Palm Beach, participated in the walking audits. They've moved forward already, and they really appreciate these recommendations. They're moving forward already with doing a request for proposals for further analysis and to fund the frontage road improvements. They're doing that on their own, and then we would work with FDOT. If there's another road in another instance that, let's say it was a road we looked at that was a perpendicular road, that would be a standalone project from FDOT that they would do versus the other road if it's a county or city road. So.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any other comments? That's the member comments.
Okay. Yeah, I've got one.
Yes.
I'd like to make a recommendation of the TPA. We seem to struggle maintaining a quorum or getting a quorum. I know each group maintains an attendance list.
Yeah.
Are those provided to the governing board? And could they be?
I think they are.
To make sure that
not
their nominees are meeting their expectations.
When you miss a few meetings, I think that's happened. I've only been here a few months, but when somebody misses a meeting consecutively, or there's like a cutoff of if you miss X amount of meetings.
Well, I know there are rules for absences as opposed to excused absences in the bylaws.
Right.
But what I would encourage is that this one sheet for the bicycle group, the tax, and the CAC, all be provided to the governing board.
So they can see the record of attendance.
Yes.
Bill, I'm unsure of how many representatives actually look at our minutes for our committee, like at the end, but we do provide that at the end of all the minutes so they can reference that. And like Jason said, after two unexcused absences, we do send a letter, and we always copy the representative that nominated that member.
Yeah, okay.
So there is.
So we do let them know, like, you know, your person has not been here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, my only suggestion would be to put the attendance at the front of the minutes instead of the back.
Yes.
So for example.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is a good example.
Yeah. And the question I have is, an excused absence is...
Well, that's defined in the bylaws, so I'm not challenging that.
No, an excused absence is as if you were here.
Oh, as if you, so it counts for a quorum?
No, it does.
No. But what I'm saying is, it says if you missed two meetings...
And they're not excused.
Without notice, 24, at least 24 hour notice.
Now, the question is, and I'm not going to pick on... We're not going to pick on her.
Six of them, though.
Yeah.
And then one absent. And
so
in a 12-month period, she's only been present once.
Right.
And my point is we're all volunteers here. Hopefully, whoever appointed us has an expectation that we're going to be at, you know, a reasonable percentage of the meetings for the votes.
Agreed. But what I'm saying is that if you have a person has been here one meeting in the year.
I would think whoever appointed that individual might want to appoint a different individual.
Exactly.
But that's the TPA governing board's representative's decision, not ours.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm suggesting.
In that 12-month period, there's mostly ease there.
So because that person might have called 24 hours in advance and says, I'm going to be here.
But there's still, it makes a very obvious observation that there's a commitment issue whether they call it in 24 hours or not.
Okay. So you want to make a recommendation
that this sheet for each of the sub-tier committees be provided in the packet to the TPA governing board.
Okay.
Right. And I think.
And then they can do with it whatever they want.
Right. But I think maybe we should look at the rules in the of the
bylaws.
The bylaws to see if that needs to be addressed.
I think those are probably standardized across all the boards and committees. So.
I just don't think it was meant to have that many E's.
But I'm not challenging the bylaws.
I have one excuse.
Well,
but I have
Rich Wagman has two already. And he was excused today, right?
He was excused today, yeah.
But you know, that's something the governing board appointer should decide.
This person should be made aware of.
Yeah.
Should be made aware of.
Yes.
And that could be a decision that appointee uses discretion to decide. Because I personally pick the phone going, hey, do you have a problem with 1:30 on Wednesday in the afternoon? Because if you do, I understand, no disrespect to you or judgmental or whatever, but I'll find somebody who can make that 1:30 Wednesday. That's all.
Through the chair, I guess the issue fundamentally that we're getting to, Bill, is in a different level. This table is informative, but what we really need to do is have Joni Brinkman, who appointed me, know directly how many meetings I've had.
Yes. It's that issue.
Right. That's what
and that we're able to reliably expect we're going to have a quorum when we get here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, the appointing person needs to know the attendance of the person they appoint.
So maybe what we should do, so we're not picking on any one person, is have a, for each of us, so I'm Melissa McKinley, just send a letter, here's Michelle DeBones, attendance record, and then you, and then everybody else, just as an FYI.
I think that's making...
And then they can make a decision
I think that's even making more burden on the TPA staff.
Oh.
I'm just saying, Xerox this table for each of the meetings.
Ooh.
And put it in the TPA's packet.
Gotcha.
Let them make their own decision.
And with the backup, just include all the committee.
Or maybe the front will make that.
Because, you know...
I mean, you're looking for...
People's meeting.
An extra column that says... number of meetings attended.
No,
I'm not.
Sure.
We had nine people here.
So we want to make sure we
produce.
Yeah.
Don't
do anything else to it. Just stick it in their packet.
And then see if anything happens.
And maybe just each commissioner, you just highlight the highlights.
We need to do something different.
How about you?
If they choose not to do anything, that's their decision.
Billy, you aren't the first to bring it up. In our TDLCB, they brought it up as well, because that's a quarterly meeting, and a lot of people usually call and they have it excused, and you know they don't come the whole year, and it's four meetings in the year.
What's a quarterly meeting?
Our Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board.
Oh, okay.
So they brought it up as well.
Good. But what I'm saying is, maybe the TPA should have a discussion based on how do I get the people who make the appointments to recognize the person they have appointed who may be fully qualified just doesn't have the time.
Yeah.
Or doesn't prioritize this
at a higher level. Maybe you all need to tell the TPA when you're appointing a person, it's 10 meetings a year, and the meetings are expected to be no less than an hour and no more than 2 hours. I don't expect that.
Okay.
So, Chair, if you would like, we can add the bylaws to your next meeting. If you would like to make an adjustment to add in that we send notices after 2 absences, whether they're excused or unexcused, just so that the second item that I wanted to highlight is, Bill, with your statement just now, when Nick does meet with all of the governing board members, he does let them know that they can appoint somebody to the CAC, what the expectations are. There's 10 meetings a year.
Okay.
What types of people, as is stated in our bylaws, that we want on the committee, like whether they're engineers or public citizens, as it's listed in the bylaws. That's okay. Right. That's what he.
Well, maybe
he does
as part of his interface with the members of the board, he may need to talk about it.
And
excuse doesn't do us any good.
And one related issue, I don't know how many TPA governing board members there are. Are there some who have chosen?
There's 21 elected officials on our governing board.
Okay, we had what, 15 people on here?
15.
16? You know, maybe they need to make a pitch. If you haven't nominated anybody to the TAC or the CAC or the bicycle or whatever,
he's done that a few times.
Please do it. You know, please go back and, you know, talk in your municipality.
So I can add that to his director's report this before this coming month?
Yeah.
Encourage
him to have unfilled spots to fill.
Okay. Thank you. I would not put it on the agenda for July.
Okay.
Because you probably will have difficulty having a quorum in July. So let's put it on in September.
Do you want it for September? Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
I like your suggestion.
Anything else?
Yeah, I just got a quick
comment.
On a similar note, I'd just like to apologize for being late today. I had a senior moment about 1 o'clock. I realized I was supposed to be here. So, you know, I respect everybody's, you know, making the commitment, and I don't want to be the last one here. I'm glad she came in after I did, so. So I didn't make the quorum.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.